Hi, it's Joe Lowry, host of the Global Lithium Podcast. This is going to be the first episode in the new decade, and it really came about simply by having the opportunity. I was in Reno, didn't have any equipment, didn't have a studio handy, so we recorded this on my iPhone, but honestly, the sound is pretty good, and I don't think it will diminish your enjoyment of the episode. My guests are, for most of the podcast, there are a couple of different segments, but for most of the podcast, my guests are Dr. Rene LeBlanc, CTO of Lithium Americas, and Alexei Zawadzki, the president of Lithium Nevada. We do shout outs to John Irish Exit Canalitzis, Dr. Tom Benson, and then towards the end of the podcast, we have a five guys in a bar segment, where you'll hear from cameos from Dongwei Han, Ted Grandy, and Randall Astronaut Burns. So I hope you enjoy it. My first experience trying to record a podcast on an iPhone, but frankly, I think it turned out pretty well. And with that, I'll leave it to it. Welcome to another edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. I am here tonight, after several adult beverages, with my good friends, Dr. Rene LeBlanc, and the biggest feat in lithium, Alexei Zawadzki. Okay, so, you know, we're in the shadow of the Gigafactory, as people on Twitter like to say, in the Reno Sparks area. And I just want to catch up with my good friends. So I'm going to start off with Dr. LeBlanc, the CTO, and just say, you know, you guys have a great Twitter feed. And when I look at that Twitter feed, the LAC Twitter feed, I see great progress at Cauchari. So you want to kind of just bring us up to date on what's going on?
Sure.
At Cauchari?
I'll admit it's been an incredibly busy year down there. The team's been doing a fantastic job. Ponds have been under construction now for over a year. We're pumping brine into several of the ponds. We've brought multiples online. Foundations are actually being built, and it feels great to see buildings going up down there. The main actual warehouse has come up. Our camp is online down there now and is being commissioned, and we're looking forward to a really busy 2020 on that project.
How many people do you have on site now?
Roughly 700 people as of December, including contractors and employees for MinerXR and Lithium Americas. So it's a large organization, and they are working right now heavily on getting ready for commissioning and startup. There's a lot of planning going on for those first months of work.
So when we look at the startup, we're talking early 2021 or...
Late 2020, early 2021's about right. A lot of equipment's coming in early part this year. And with those foundations that are going in now, we'll start to see the plant come up later this year.
So, you know, I really appreciate you standing in for the very common disappearing act of John Canalitzis, my good friend who tends to dump on me on a regular basis. And, you know, when we talked about doing this podcast a few hours ago, I get a text message saying, I'm on my way back to Vancouver on an urgent basis. So, John, we continue to love you. We think you need, again, to update the hats. The hats are good, but they're not, you know, I mean, come on. Let's move into the new decade.
But in JK's defense, he does have a good excuse. He did have to take off on important business. So
well, you know, hey, we all love JK here, and okay, John, you know, I tried to get you on the podcast in December. You know, kind of oshidashied me, to use a sumo term, which basically means pushing me out of the ring. And okay, so we've got the brief update on Cauchari, and now we're going to move over to the biggest feat in lithium, the man,
the legend in his own mind and possibly the minds of two or three other people on the planet.
That's pushing it.
Yeah, well, okay. And Fiona, and I'm not talking about my Fiona, I'm talking about Alexi's wife, Fiona. Fiona, you're probably, I hope you're the other person that fills that role. So when we, you know, I'm in Reno now for the second time in 8 weeks. We saw the pilot plan again today. We've seen the progress. So when we did a podcast with the, what we called the Clay Boys then, but in with respect to Dr. Thomas Benson, we no longer call this a clay asset. We call this a sedimentary asset. So when we're now talking about the progress you've made with the flow sheet, with the pilot plant, take us to from June of 2018 when we last talked to today. Where are we?
It's been nonstop since we published the PFS. We knew what we had to do coming off of the PFS. It was a very positive PFS. We still had work to do, as you do with a lot of PFS studies, and we've executed on that. So we've established, we designed, built a pilot or research facility to further advance our process. That's been in operation now for almost a year, coming up to now. That is located in Reno. It's fully staffed by Lithium America's employees. We also have a lab in there, so we analyze our own samples. And we've done a couple of things that really have advanced our process. One is to beneficiate the ore, and that was not included in the PFS, but we're now able to, through work that Dr. Tom Benson did at Stanford, we've understood exactly where, at the micron level, where the lithium is in our ore. And we found out, or Tom found out, that lithium is located in the finer fractions of the ore. And so now we have an attrition process and a classification and separation process that takes out the coarse fractions of the ore. And by doing that, we basically take out about 30% of the 30 to 40% of the throughput that we used to do, that we had included in the PFS, through the plant, through this classification and separation process. That uses less sulfuric acid. Sulfuric acid consists, in the PFS level, was about 40% of our OPEX. So the other thing that we did was, how do we reduce our consumption of sulfuric acid? And that's what we're focused on at the plant, is through a variety of processes to reduce consumption of sulfuric acid. So we've achieved that in the lab, and we now have a very clear line of sight to the publication of our definitive feasibility study, which we anticipate will be, we expect to publish that by mid-2020.
So when you look at, you have a DFS mid-2020, then when would we see construction start in your mind?
But you know, that's a function of a couple of things. One is permits, and the second is financing. Permits right now, that's gone very well. Our permitting process, we submitted our main permitting application documents, which is the plan of operations, on schedule, in July of 2019. That application has gone through the Bureau of Land Management. Our project is located on 100% public lands administered by the Bureau of Land Management, so they're handling our application process. That has gone quite well over the last 6 months. We anticipate the issuance of what's called a notice of intent, which kicks off a legislated 365-day process fairly imminently. We expect to have that done within the month of January here, and that kicks off that 365-day process, meaning the major permits have to be, for construction, would have to be issued if the process was to be followed within 365 days. So we're on schedule for permitting right now as we see it. The next part of that equation, of course, is project finance. And we feel at this point that process to get a partner in, we're looking at to bring in a partner and to do some to bring in capital to build the project. We anticipate that process to be parallel to our DFS study. So we hope to start a formal process by mid this year, in concert with the publication of our DFS. But we've already started to have preliminary discussions with potential partners on this project to bring them up to speed on why this project is so special. And those discussions have gone well to date.
Okay, let me... Wait about, the PFS for Thacker Pass was based on lithium carbonate, but there's been a change, and the DFS will be based on a model where the first product is lithium hydroxide, and there'll be a small subset of lithium carbonate produced as a result of that. So, Dr. LeBlanc, could you speak to that?
Happily. With the project in Nevada, one of the big advantages is that we actually make a lithium sulfate. So it gives us the opportunity to make lithium hydroxide directly or lithium carbonate directly, depending upon what's really needed for the market. It also allows us to run an integrated plant so that we can control the impurities and the crystal better for lithium hydroxide or lithium carbonate production. There's a few tricks behind that, but in reality, what's driving it more than anything else is the changes that we're actually seeing going on in the cathode market and around the world, similar to some of the things you've talked about in the past on your podcast, Joe.
So if we look out 2, 3, 4, 5 years, then my impression is that Lithium Americas is basically saying we are better served by being a high-quality hydroxide producer because of the changes in the demand for lithium chemicals, and that the high nickel cathodes will result in a higher demand for lithium hydroxide. Am I close?
Yeah, that's exactly it. As we see high nickel demand come online, more and more lithium hydroxide is being used in between places like Korea and Japan right now as they are developing those markets. We've seen a large increase in those markets in lithium hydroxide consumption over the last few years. We've also seen major changes in the quality profiles that are required by those industries. So by building an integrated facility like this, it allows us to respond to those markets as they change, and it allows us to be more flexible in our quality and much more stable in our quality standards.
So let's take a step back and let's talk about both Cauchari and Thacker Pass in terms of, if we look at almost every plant that's running around the globe for lithium chemicals, they were either built or built and conceived before the lithium ion battery industry was really in existence. So, I think you have the advantage of now knowing the changes in specification. Could you talk a little bit about some of the ways that plays out in how you design your plant? I get a lot of questions about, the people will bring up the fact that, well, aren't you in the same basic province for Cauchari as Orocobre, and Orocobre struggled? But if we take a step back and look at when Orocobre planned their project, they only conceived of making 99% lithium carbonate, which anybody who's close to the industry knows that's not going to get you where you want to be.
Exactly. And honestly, depending upon what you're targeting for your end products, you have to consider that as part of the design of the plant. So it's not just the resource, it's not just the location, but on top of that, you have to think about where those customers see value in the product. Sometimes that may be a chemical specification. Sometimes it is going to be a particle size, a physical specification. But many times it's a stability question. So when we went through and looked at the process for Kalchari, we spent a lot of time as a team, especially with our partners and with our engineering teams down there, looking very carefully at how we can build a robust process for lithium carbonate. That is a chloride brine, so it is much easier to make it to a lithium carbonate-based product than it would be, say, off of a lithium sulfate. But it also allows us different flexibility at the site for being able to produce different targets and different chemicals.
There's one follow-up on that I'd like to ask, is that I see a lot of pundits online saying that, well, you know, it's very hard to make lithium carbonate at altitude. And can you speak a little bit to, I mean, as far as I think we both know that for 20 years, FMC was able to make battery quality lithium carbonate in the Puna in Argentina at over 4,000 meters. Mm-hmm. But there's this narrative out there now that it's just too hard to make battery quality product at altitude. And I'd like you to help me explain why that is not necessarily the case.
Sure. Honestly, I think it comes down more to adapting the process properly to the resource and to the customer needs. Making battery grade materials and really understanding what customers need is not a trivial matter. It can be very difficult just because there is a variety of needs that are out there depending upon the end application of the battery. So with having a green field in this case, or a clean sheet design, we actually have the opportunity to take into account a lot of those lessons that have been learned over the years. It is very possible to produce very high quality lithium carbonate at altitude. Same with lithium chloride and a few other chemicals as well. As you said, there's several producers that have been able to do that in history, and we're applying a lot of those lessons and a lot of what we know now about where the industry is going to try and design this.
I think, yeah, I'd just like to reiterate what one of your colleagues said today when we were talking, that, you know, when people are concerned about that you can't make battery quality at high altitude, it was really, what I heard was that it's basically not even advanced high school chemistry to know that if you're at altitude, you just need to adjust for the effects of altitude on the various vagaries that impact production.
Exactly. And one of the big things is that, especially at the altitudes we're talking about, there's not a whole lot of air up there, as you know, from being at site a few times. And you really do need to take that into account, not only from a process equipment performance standpoint, but also from a people performance standpoint. So it comes down to really understanding the ability and capability of what you can do at that altitude. And honestly, it's an engineering problem to be solved. It's a, you know, as you said, it's a high school chemistry problem to figure it out. It can be done, but it's a challenge.
And so my final question is directed to the biggest feat in lithium. And that is, when you look at Thacker Pass and what the challenges you have before you, what keeps you awake at night?
So figuratively, because I sleep every single night just fine, but figuratively, I understand what you're asking.
Well, that's because of your deep and insightful knowledge of human nature.
But you know, it initially, I mean, a couple of years ago, it was permitting. You know, with these types of projects, a fairly large footprint.
For those of you in the United States of America, that would be a project. But we're going to make allowances for the Canadian pronunciation of project.
We're going to get
into this. So let's just continue. Sorry for the interruption.
Listen, when you start making up words, I'll let you know too. But you know, with any, you know, by conscious design, we designed this project to avoid the environmental attributes, which we knew were regionally significant, and move the project into Thacker Pass, hence the name Thacker Pass Project. But still a large footprint. This is a big project, and so with anything, you know, even with that design work, you know, you have to collect your data, you have to collect your cultural data and your environmental data, and that kept me up. That was a concern. After completing our baseline data assessment, there's a function of conscious design and good design, and there's another function of just luck with these projects. And we were quite fortunate that we have not encountered anything that we feel that is unmanageable in terms of environmental or cultural resources. So that I think that we're comfortable where we're sitting right now. We still have to complete the permitting process, but we're pretty comfortable based on our baseline assessment. Moving forward, I think the next step now is, of course, project finance. And this is a sedimentary ore. It's different. We feel it's the technology that we're using is no different than any other extractive metallurgy that's in place right now, just not happens to be in lithium, but in the we basically borrowed the phosphate technology and applied it to lithium, but that is a hurdle we're going to have to get over to explain that to potential partners to bring in the capital that we need to build this project. So that's what we're focused on right now. I'm confident that we're going to be able to do that, but that's really what we're focused on right now. Is this is a different technology for lithium, as was, you know, pond evaporation brine was in the 80s, which was transformative for the industry. This is similar.
Mr. Bigfoot, you know, I started this shorter form podcast largely because of your criticism that your concentration span wasn't long enough deal with the longer podcast. So we're getting to the point where we're at your threshold. That's so we're right. Going to bring this to a close. So if you have any final thoughts you'd like to give the listener on the project, and I'd just like to hear a little bit about the support you've gotten from Nevada, local and national support for the project. I've called 2020 the decade of lithium. I believe that LAC has a great chance to be like the most significant newcomer with the partnership you have with Ganfeng, with all you're doing between Cauchari and Thacker Pass. I think, you have an unlimited opportunity here, but I'd like to just get your thoughts on, since we are in Reno, let's talk a little bit about the support you've gotten from Nevada, the support you've gotten from on a national level, and the time you're spending on that aspect.
Yeah, Nevada is a great place to do business. And it doesn't matter what business that you're doing. It's just a fantastic place to do business. One, there's a can-do attitude in Nevada. Nevadans kind of get things done. And that doesn't matter what industry you're in. It's ubiquitous. Second is the support that we have from government, whether it's at the county level, at the state level, and at the federal level, but at all levels of government. It's not just a Nevada thing, but at all levels of government, we have incredible support, for the project. It's not to say that we're sidestepping any regulations or anything like that. We're doing everything that we need to do to the, to a very high level of discipline. But the fact that our permits get reviewed quickly and at pace, and the government is doing what they say they're going to do as they review our process and our project and it goes through the permitting process, it's comforting to me that we have that support, that our files aren't sitting on somebody's desk for excessive periods of time while we're being fed excuses. That's not the case here. So it's just a fantastic place to do business in general. Our stakeholders are also very welcoming. We have a lot of support from our neighbors, and we want to be good neighbors too. We try to present a transparent and honest perspective of the project, and I think that's been well received by our stakeholders. But our stakeholders are giving us a lot of support too in the local community. Nevada is very innovative, and we've seen a transformation in Reno since I've been working here for the last 6 years. 5-6 years. It's with Tesla coming in and other high tech firms coming in, it's transformative. This is not just a gaming and mining state. It's turning into a high tech state. And I think that bodes well for what our vision is for the project. Our view here is that we've got kind of the bookends of the lithium supply chain that we're presenting right now. We have our project, which is supply. We have Tesla, who makes the gigafactory here, making batteries and support for vehicles. We'd like to fill that gap and in between there, and that's kind of our vision, is to be able to do that. Our project is permitted for not just production of lithium, but also cathodic material and batteries, so
there may be an ecosystem in your future.
That's what our vision is. We'd like to bring that to Nevada, and definitely the Nevada government is extremely supportive of that vision as well.
Just a few days ago, Livent came out with revised guidance for 2020. And basically, they talked about lower than expected pricing for hydroxide, volume issues, having to source carbonate and as feedstock for hydroxide, and the negative impact that has. And all these points are just underpinnings of what I was saying 3 years ago when I started talking about the House of Cards strategy. I had hoped to see Livent start to try to change course and more balance their portfolio. I believe that they would go in that direction. They have not. And basically everything I said about the pillars of the House of Cards, of the shaky pillars of the House of Cards, to kind of further bastardize that metaphor, it's coming true in spades. Livent always said that they had the best lithium hydroxide, and that clearly is no longer the case. Ganfeng now has as good or better quality and much higher volume. Livent, for the portion of their hydroxide that they have to source carbonate for, virtually with today's pricing, doesn't make money, doesn't make any kind of acceptable margin on those incremental hydroxide tons made from source carbonate. And so, none of this is news, or should have been news to them. They should have come clean with the whole story in Q4. And I again will say I'm pro Livent. I want them to right the ship, but they they're basically in a tough spot earnings wise right now from their own doing. And, I'm not going to beat a dead horse here, but I do think it's worth comment, because I basically predicted this in Q4 when they started talking about the inventory that was going to be strategically held off the market, and basically they didn't have a buyer for it then, and they don't have a buyer for it now, because it isn't because of China so much now as the China customer didn't come through. That was a 2019 thing. By now, they should have known that the direction of 811 in China wasn't going where they thought it was going. But they also have problems in other provinces, just simply because Ganfeng is now seen as the leader. And, that's just my take. I think the facts support it very well. And I think if you want to go back and do some forensics on it, go back and look about what I said would be the problems and what has happened. Doesn't make me happy, but I just still think that when you are in a world where hydroxide price is plummeting and will converge with carbonate price, and you're the low-cost carbonate producer and not the low-cost hydroxide producer, staying with a flawed strategy doesn't make sense. As far as the kind of the spodumene situation in WA, and of course that means it's in China too, I don't have a lot of significant new information to tell you, only that it does look like that inventory is going to take a long time to get worked off. I think that's a pretty obvious statement. But, you know, I think we're also looking at a world where now you've got converters with financial issues. You have now financial companies trying to buy carbonate up because they see the bottom is near. And I just really think this is becoming, as I talked about on an earlier podcast in a LinkedIn post, that, you know, lithium needed an enema in 2020. I think, you know, we're really seeing that come to pass. I think that there will be another care and maintenance situation happening in the next few months, or there'll be some kind of announcement. More capacity needs to come off, get the spodumene inventory worked down. But I also think the negative sentiment that this continues to influence is very, very negative. The lack of lithium investment long term is basically we're gonna have another 2015, 2016 turn in price. As I've said before, I don't think it's happened in the 2020. I think it's more of a 2021 story. And I got roundly misquoted by some people today that claim they listened to the podcast and basically kind of misconstrued what I said. So let me be really clear. I do think you'll have a very tough 2020. I don't think battery quality prices in Korea and Japan are going to go much lower than they are right now. But they are, you know, for Q1, Q2, probably going to be in the 9,000 range. But, you know, the real story on this excess spodumene inventory is more of a China story and the impact it's going to continue to have throughout 2020. But eventually this is going to get worked off. The real problem becomes if you have collapses and converters, you know, the market's really going to need that capacity. I mean, I think Benchmark stated they thought, you know, demand grew 18% last year. I think it's a little less than that. But, you know, if we had 40 to 45,000 tons of growth in a bad year, it's, you know, all the good news you're hearing from Tesla and all the announcements you're continuing to hear and all the positive buzz about what EVs in Europe are going to do in 2020, that is going to cause ultimately a huge pressure on battery quality materials. And we're going to see a turn in price. And, you know, that's not new news to you, people that listen to me, but it is going to happen. And, you know, I got the new numbers from Korea and Japan through November. And, you know, I talked about the September year to date being annualized, and, you know, the numbers now in November look just about the same as what was projected. So you really had an increase of 25 to 30,000 tons of combined between Korea and Japan of LCE imports. And that is significant growth. And so I don't want to beat this to death, but I do just think that, it's going to be a tough slog in WA in 2020. I'm hoping my friends all survive. And ultimately, as I've said before, I believe all the mines are ultimately going to be needed. And, you know, whether they have new ownership at some point, or I can't tell you how it's going to play out from a financial situation and, you know, whether there'll be ownership changes. But, you know, it's growing pains in 2020, but I still say this decade is the lithium decade. On this episode, in lieu of rapid fire, I have what I call five guys in a bar segment. Some friends were in Reno, and it would be our two podcast guests. You know, friend of mine, Dong Wei Han, and Ted Grandy, who also works with Lithium Americas. And Alexei Zawadzki happened to pose a question, and you'll hear all five answers. And this is just fair warning that if this type of thing doesn't interest you, then you can skip the next 3 minutes and 8 seconds.
Any moment in time
that you can be alive in for one day, what would it be?
Any moment in time.
Any moment in time. Now or in the future?
In the future is probably harder for me. I mean, if I had to pick from the past, it would probably be the Apollo launch.
The Apollo launch. Yeah, interesting. Just, why?
Just thinking back to all the challenges in history and all the things that people would have said felt insurmountable. And to see that actually come together and happen. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm too much of an engineer, but just seeing, you know, being given a challenge, playing by somebody else's rules and beating the problem anyway is always so much fun.
June 1950, US Open.
I knew you were going there. Golf.
Yes, Ben Hogan.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Greatest comeback of
all time.
Yeah. In sports history. So yeah. Marion.
That's a good one.
Okay. Speak up, my friend.
When Winston Churchill said that he would join the war and said we could fight on the beaches.
I was going to say what he said.
You liar. Have an original thought for once in your life.
Okay.
I took your tacos.
I know he took my tacos. He took my Winston Churchill. Okay. So, Jurassic period. I really want to see a dinosaur. I would love to see any dinosaur. I'm fascinated by dinosaurs. I would love it. I would just T-Rex walking by would make my day.
I would go back to the NFL league meetings in 1963. I would have the Super Bowl be 1 year earlier than it was. And then that way, either the Cleveland Football Browns or the Buffalo Bills would have been Super Bowl champions.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, you want
to
judge?
Any point in time, I'm going to be a little bit judgy. Any point in time.
You want to be a freaking dinosaur?
Is that
the best you can do?
A dinosaur. Look at massive creature that walked across the earth. I mean, how can you not be fast? And you pick a football game?
You know what? You're so judgmental.
Okay, no, first, you don't drive an EV. And second, do I even know you?
Okay, anymore? This is just like four guys or five guys talking or four guys and one judger. Okay, and if I had to pick another moment in time, I would be there when Pontius Pilate said crucify him.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that better than the Cleveland Browns versus the Buffalo Bills?
Okay, it's a step up,
okay.
I would say. Yes.
Thank you very much. This segment is now officially over.
We round out tonight's episode with a riding in an EV segment in which I am in Randall Astronaut Burns' Chevy EV, which actually is a very nice vehicle. And we talk a little bit about why Randall Burns and Alexei Zawadzki love their EVs, and they pretty much, or mostly Alexei, pretty much chastises me for me being the lithium guy who doesn't own a Tesla yet. So I take the abuse, and I think this is something I'm going to continue to do in the future as I travel and talk to EV owners about why they love their cars. One final thing is when I flew home from Reno and got to Charlotte Airport, got an Uber, and my Uber was a Tesla Model S, and anybody who's from Charlotte knows you don't see that many Teslas in Charlotte. So the fact that I got a ride home in a Tesla Uber, some people thought that that was a sign that I should finally bite the bullet and get my Tesla. We'll see.
What are you doing today?
This is a special in the EV edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. I am riding with the biggest feet in lithium,
and astronaut Burns of Lithium Nevada. We are cruising across Reno, Nevada in astronaut Burns' electric vehicle. Riding shotgun are the biggest feet in lithium, who have been chastising me mercilessly because I do not own an EV yet. So gentlemen, tell me, what brought you to the electric revolution?
Well, Joe, you know, I love the fact that I don't have to change the oil in my car. That is the bane of my existence for the longest time, is trying to find and schedule the time, and not just the oil, all the other stuff that goes wrong with a internal combustion engine. And not having to do that, not having to deal with that, is just such a privilege to have. It really is a pleasure. And Randall, I know you were talking about no more trips to the gas station.
Yeah, particularly as a car guy, I like the acceleration and the no gear changing. It's just one gear, it goes.
Well, clearly, I've been relegated to the back seat for obvious reasons, and I am not part of this revolution yet, but I've now been inspired to consider going to the Tesla store at South Park Mall in Charlotte and finding out what my options are. But I may pull an astronaut Burns and instead buy a EV of a different ilk. So on future episodes of the Global Lithium Podcast, we will talk about that journey. Goodbye and good luck.
So there you have it, the first long-form Global Lithium podcast of the new decade. A little non-standard, given it was mostly recorded on an iPhone, several different venues. I will continue to try to do new things. Some of them will succeed, some will fail. That's life in a nutshell. But again, if you made it this far, thank you very much for listening. Your comments are welcome. You can leave me comments on the Anchor app, or you probably know how to get a hold of me on social media at Global Lithium on Twitter or on LinkedIn, or a lot of you people already know my email address because I get a lot of emails from podcast listeners. So thanks again, and I'll see you on the next episode.